All right, so instead, my name is Chris Ostrovo. I'm a PhD student under Jay Noller at Oregon State. And the title is Soil Development Along Environmental Gradients in the Willamette National Forest. So some background why I'm doing this. There was a similar study by Craig Rasmussen looking at soils developing on a Miocene-aged andesitic lahar in the Northern Sierra. And I wanted to see if the trends from that study continued along a northern latitude, and can they be applied from this one, sequence to the whole forest. And so from that paper, the main points were that soil morphology shifts along an elevational gradient as precipitation increases and temperature decreases. And they shift along the order scale from mollisol to alfasol to ultisol, then on to andesols, septisols, entisols. And their biggest break was where the winter snow line is, that is where winter precipitation is dominantly snow versus rain. That's the break between ultisol and andesol. So that below that is the line of maximum weathering. Then above that you get andesols. And that goes along with the idea that andesols are formed under this snow flushing, or under they need snow to help form in these environments. So my study area for this is the Willamette National Forest. It is on the west coast of Oregon. It's approximately 1.6 million acres, stretches for 45 miles across, 110 miles north and south. So that red outline there is the forest. The eastern boundary is the crest of the Cascades Range. So this is the subduction zone volcanics. So elevationally, going from west to east, we have a rise. So the east side is the highest elevation. So I chose three transects with 5 points for each transect, and I try to keep them on stable summit or saddle positions to not be affected by colluvial or fluvial influences. So keep in mind the red outline. I've rotated it so I can zoom into it. So north is to the right here. The three transects are along Mount Jefferson, which is the farthest north and on the right of the screen. The middle is the Three Sisters Mountains, and the most southerly is Diamond Peak. And so those yellow dots represent each of my sample points. The blue line you see is what was glaciated 18,000 years ago. So approximately half of each of my points were recently glaciated, but the entire forest was under ice or glaciated at some point during the Ice Age. So they all have some ice influence. So from this, I hypothesized that soil morphology will change with elevation. However, since I'm looking at a slightly shorter elevational range, and the whole area has a lot more precipitation than Northern California, those changes might be more mute. I'm also thinking that weathering will increase with elevation until that permanent snow line, following Rasmussen's paper. And also following that, short-range order minerals will dominate the clay size fraction above the snow line, and kaolinite will dominate clay size fraction below the snow line. So on to my results. So this is soil taxonomy. They're north to south, up and down on the page. Elevation increases to the right. And then they have the Jefferson transect on top, Sisters, and Diamond going down. If you notice, predominantly these are andesols. The entire Sisters transect is andesols. When we do get to low elevations on both the Diamond and the Jefferson transects, we do see some entisols and septisols. There are two mollisols. If you notice at the far southwest low elevation points, and that is, this forest is so large that once we get that far south, there is this Holocene thermal pocket. So it's warm there. It hasn't been glaciated as recently. So that's why there's a red line around those. The blue line there represents the glaciated 18K. And so that area, or that line, is also approximately our current snow line. And so that's where we should be seeing our andesols developing. And if we look at our Sisters transect, we see andesols stretching much lower in elevation than we would expect. And we think this is due to the fact that before 18,000 years ago, this was colder, and so those andesols formed a lot longer ago, and they're relict in age. Also, if you notice, on the Diamond transect, we start seeing spodic properties, so spodic vitrichrion there. And so the Diamond Age is more slowly. It's got more weathering in that area. It's older. There's been less volcanic activity from that mountain, so less influence of volcanic material. This is a picture of that transect. So you can see on the two left pictures, our pachycapodol and our lithic haplocryol. Those are, you know, they're warmer, they're not as glaciated, we're seeing organic matter accumulation, and also they're more shallow. As we get to the Andic humic cryopodol number three, that is our deepest soil. It's got the most deepest profile. Then we get to spodic, has another increase in weathering. And finally, the vitric haplocryon on the far right side. You can see it's become shallow again. It's hard to tell in that picture, but it's like 80% rock fragments. There's huge chunks in there. So it's our shallowest weathering. So onomorphology. So as our elevation increases, we see a profile depth increase, maximizing at approximately 1,450 to 1,650 meters. That's the graph on the left. So both the Jefferson, the Diamond, or all the Jefferson, Diamond, and Sisters transects all take a huge increase in depth right along that elevational range. And so we're thinking that is the zone of maximum weathering, and that coincides with the snow line, which is approximately 1,500 meters for this area. One oddball is that Diamond gets really shallow right before that, and so we think there just may be some weathering or some event that's taken off the top and decreased it. All right, on discussion. So we did see some changes in taxonomy. However, instead of the order scale, they were at the suborder scale. So we saw mostly andesols and different types of andesols. So we are seeing a trend, but it's not as pronounced. We do see a weathering maxima between 1,450 meters and 1,650 meters. Unlike Rasmus paper, we saw low base saturation throughout the entire sequence of soils, except for the molsols, and we think that's just due to this having higher precipitation across the entire forest, so more weathering. Those molsols are a result of our Holocene thermal pocket, so they're warmer, they weren't as recently glaciated. The other thing we have difference in this study is change in paramaterial. Instead of a single chrono sequence or a single lithology, we have, it's all mostly basalt, but there are different basalt flows in there, so there might be some micro changes in our chemical composition. Also, as we get higher in elevation, we're into the Cascade Range graben, and so it's younger volcanic material, still fairly basalt in composition, but there is pumice and ash influence. And finally, when we looked at our taxon, we saw how low andesols are forming elevationally. We think that this is due to a lower snow line in the past. So these are relic soils that were developed more than 18,000 years ago and are just staying there. Nothing is causing them to change, which has some implications for climate change in the past. If these soils become destroyed from a landslide or some human impact, they will not be forming at those same places anymore because our snow line is now increased. And as human climate change advances that snow line higher in elevation, we'll see less andesol formation and more of these inceptisols and entisols and potentially even mollisols forming where they're not traditionally formed. So future work, and do X-ray diffraction on the clay size to actually determine if short-range order minerals are dominating these areas. Also ICP-MS to do elemental analysis to see what the actual weathering profile is from the paramaterial of each of these sites to the soil. So with that, I'd like to thank the Forest Service for funding. Karen Bennett was great for that. The NRCS, who I've been working with, this is part of a digital soil mapping project that I'm doing for my thesis for the whole Willamette Forest. So this is going into a large map of the entire forest. And then my advisor, Jay Nola. With that, I'll take any questions.
Questions for Christopher. Ellie.
Yes. Well, this is not the best question, but I'm kind of curious. You have andesols here that you say formed 18,000 years ago or more, mm-hmm. and have been stable. And from my world, 18,000 10,000 years is a long time for additional pedogenesis. So I'm just curious, do you have a mechanism for why they would stay stable like that? If that makes sense.
I don't have a specific mechanism. I know the forest does receive snow in low elevation, so there is some snow influence as far down as 1,000 meters, but in terms of why those low elevations haven't changed.
Right, yeah, why they're not weathering further past, so to speak, being an anisole.
Mm-hmm. I honestly don't have a good, other than there's nothing forcing them to change. They still get a lot of rainfall. They're still cold. So.
It works for me. I don't work with anisoles, so I'm just asking.
Yeah. It may be that they're in a forested area, so they have similar podzolization weathering that's keeping them in place.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you.
May I have missed it, are the lower elevation sites, let's say down by Diamond Mountain, are those frigid soil temperature regimes? Or do you ever get into mesic?
There is mesic. I'd say the haplocryol, I think, would, if I put a measuring implement in it, it would probably be frigid. The reason it's cryic is with the NRCS mapping that I'm working with, they have kind of an elevational bound that everything above 1,200 or 1,300 meters is automatically cryic. Or anywhere you see Pacific silver fir, that's cryic. So it's probably going to be frigid, but for what the mapping is classifying, it becomes cryic.
So then the follow-up on the soil taxonomy that you showed is based on the way the soils are mapped by the forest. Correct? Or did you analyze for anisole properties?
This is my description and analysis, but I'm working with the NRCS to make sure that we are describing them in the same fashion. Because they're, to make sure I'm doing the right elevational changes for what they deem as cryac or what they're in the field considering anisole properties.
Yes.
So for this particular study, because this is just a small bit of the large mapping, I was just focusing on an elevational gradient, knowing that that is associated with an increase in precipitation, a decrease in temperature. I did some PCA analysis, and they're like 98% aligned with each other. So the other environmental factors will come into play in my map, but I was trying to hold things steady to look at, when you do an NRCS map of environmental or general soil weathering over an area, this is what it's looking at. So trying to hold everything else stable.
Any other questions? We have time maybe for one more. Is there any more questions out there? Okay. Thank you very much.